The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome to the Squawker Talker. My name is Nick English. This week we're talking about English teams in Europe. Now that the dreaded UEFA coefficient is no longer an issue, attention's going to turn to how English teams can actually do in Europe this season. This week we're going to focus on Chelsea in the Champions League, as well as Spurs, Liverpool and Man United in the Europa League. Joining me this week is actually three members of Squawker staff, which is fantastic. First of all, joining us is Squawker Dave. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Nick. How's it going, mate?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Also joining us is our Liga expert and staff writer, Pete Sharland. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Nick. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very well. Such polite people. Third person joining us is features editor at Squawker, Greg Johnson. Hello, Gregory.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm good. I called him Gregory because he hates being called Gregory. Let's start off the pod by talking about Liverpool versus Manchester United, two giants of English football, unable to really string together a run of games. There's more hope at Liverpool, though, at the moment, because Klopp seems to be putting his stamp on a young side. United have problems and injuries in seemingly every single position across the pitch. There's 3 points between the two sides of the Premier League right now, Dave. Liverpool have a game in hand and are top of the Premier League form table, actually, at the moment. I was quite surprised to find out. Is it, you know, a sign of how far United have fallen in recent years that, you know, they're really struggling to impose themselves on a team which they've previously dominated in the past?
I think so, yeah. I think the thing that United have really struggled with this season is playing the teams in the bottom half of the league. You know, historically in the Premier League years, United would beat those teams comfortably 3-0, 4-0, you know, 5-0, but this Louis van Gaal Man United team, it looks like they'll either pick up a win by a one-goal margin or lose the game. Again, at the weekend, we saw West Brom play United, you know, play the perfect game against Manchester United, sit deep, then wait until something happens, aka the red card or, you know, maybe a goal that they've scored from a set piece, and then just sort of see the game out and, you know, nick a goal here and they'll take that away. It's quite interesting, a lot of Tony Pulis's wins this season have been by one goal as well, so it seemed like the perfect sort of position for West Brom to be in, playing this Man United team that had played well their previous game. So that's another thing with United. It's very hot and cold. One game they'll play very well, then they'll be very poor. Then they'll play well, then they'll be very poor. You know, you can look at the Watford game. They didn't play well there at all, but they got the win. And then the next week they went to West Brom, you know, completely got battered by them, to be quite honest.
So, but since Klopp has been appointed, you know, manager of Liverpool, they've come back from losing positions to take something from the game in 9 different matches. Roberto Firmino is also Liverpool's top scorer in the Premier League with 7 goals since the turn of the year. Two things which seem to align with kind of what Klopp's brought to Liverpool. What sort of changed over the past month at Anfield? It really feels like some sort of turning point in their season. What's Klopp managed to instill there?
I think it's a combination between, you know, getting his style of play and how he likes to press, but maybe not being so aggressive. We saw at the start of the season that Liverpool was so aggressive, which I really like. That's Klopp's style, where they get a lot of men around the ball. They switch their formation from side to side. They overload teams in central areas and they just go for the ball. They go at them. I think that was a little bit strenuous on the Liverpool side. We saw a lot of injuries. I think what he's done slightly, they still press, but they press a little bit less aggressively and they come back into their shape a lot better. And I think players like Firmino and Origi, you know, players that can run, I think that's helped them a lot. You know, we saw the City win where Origi started up front, pressed quite well. And then again against Palace, Origi started up front but got taken off later on. But I think with Firmino, Origi, Lallana, Henderson, there's a lot of energy there which potentially wasn't at the start of the season. Henderson's come back from injury. So I think it's just all sort of maybe coming together with his philosophy and you know, Lovren's back in the team as well. I think he's completely changed. Lovren was a player that everyone sort of took the mick out last season, no, not good enough for Liverpool. But you can see under the right manager, Dejan Lovren can be a very good player.
Yeah, Greg, I mean, Dave was just talking about Jordan Henderson. I mean, we were talking about this in the office the other day. It doesn't seem like he's really kicked on since being made Liverpool captain. How important can he be against Man United? How disruptive can he be to that, you know, frankly, a little bit fragile United midfield?
It massively depends on the players United line up with. I think, as we've seen, Carrick, he's not getting any younger. He's still very good at his strengths, but he's always been a player that when he's been pressed, he can be a little bit error-prone, as highlighted by United's two Champions League final defeats against Barcelona, where basically Barcelona's midfield focused on denying Carrick space and time, and it kind of crushed United's game through the middle. And I mean, Carrick, he's an older player. He's not as physically dynamic. He never was a dynamic player, but he's lost even more of his kind of his drive than that he used to have. So if you get someone like Henderson getting all over Carrick, that could be very problematic if Van Gaal again starts Carrick in midfield, especially given how kind of anarchic Herrera can be at times, and Schneiderlin is, because he's become a bit more expansive of late. That might mess up United's position in the middle if Henderson can get a grip of someone like Carrick and disrupt United's passing.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a bit about Ander Herrera. I mean, it might sound controversial, but there's a lot of people, you know, having the debate. Is Ander Herrera the most inconsistent player in the league? It must be very frustrating for a United fan to watch someone like Ander Herrera, who's clearly very talented, but can't seem to string two games together or get a regular run of games under Van Gaal.
It is, but I think there's two problems with Herrera. One, I think he's such a likeable player in both the style of football he plays and how much United have missed a player like him for so long, that people have overrated him to some extent, and his very kind of exuberant style of midfield play, both in his tackling and his passing, his getting forward. People have wanted that in United midfield for so long that they're kind of willing to overlook and maybe even hide his weaknesses. He can be positionally a bit dodgy. As I said, he can be a bit anarchic at times, especially when he gets a bit of a rush of blood to the head. He can go in, get silly fouls. He can pull himself out of position, especially in United team, where United at the moment are almost like a Formula One car. When it clicks, it can be really good. But if there's one slight niggle in any part of the team, the whole thing falls apart. So when Herrera does go off on one, it can be quite damaging to the entire kind of flow of the team. Mm. Obviously, humans are humans and they're not robots. So it's a kind of a stupid way to manage a team. And Van Gaal, it's probably his fault that that's the case. But that's kind of Herrera's problem and his fault, in that he brings the ball forward, he breaks through the lines, but that can also be problematic. The second thing with Herrera is that he hasn't had a proper run in the kind of role where he's looked best for United. United played a 4-3-3 last spring. And the thing with Herrera, he's not quite secure enough to play a deep line role, but he's not quite, you know, he doesn't quite have the quality to be a number 10. He's a player that needs to be kind of in between those two gaps. And in a 4-3-3, he really did nail that kind of box-to-box role, where he's box-to-box with a bit of creativity. He had energy, he had ideas, he was very good on the ball as well. When he doesn't have that kind of in-between role, he does look a bit lost sometimes. I'd like to see him played on the right, a bit like how Aaron Ramsey plays for Arsenal sometimes. And I believe he used to play in that role for Bilbao as well. So I'd like maybe against Liverpool to kind of up the ante, especially if Lingard hasn't quite got that quality of the end product. Might be nice to see Herrera played there instead.
Interesting theory. I mean, Pete, Man United have struggled for a midfield consistency ever since Van Gaal's taken charge. I mean, I've got a stat here which sort of highlights that, is that only Watford have played more long balls than United this season in the Premier League. The Red Devils average 61 long balls a game, which is, you know, staggering. But conversely, they've made the fewest clearances in the league. So it seems to be they're making these decisions under little pressure. They're just choosing to go long, despite the fact they've got realistically two ball-playing midfielders in Ander Herrera and Morgan Schneiderlin. Does Van Gaal just need to pick three midfielders or two midfielders and just say, yep, yeah, we're going with that? Or what exactly does he need to do?
I think that ultimately, Greg's right, picking three in the middle is the way to go, especially if you're going to go away to Liverpool. It's a big game, first time they've played each other in Europe. It's going to be a very tense affair at Anfield under the lights. If you play with two in midfield, especially with the way Liverpool are playing with their three in midfield, then they're going to get totally overrun. Van Gaal needs to drop Mata now, he's suspended in the league, take away the attacking midfielder and go with a more solid 4-3-3, because it will make things more easy for them to control games, like he wants, really. That's what he's talked about since he came in. He wants to control games and make sure that there are no mistakes, but his team is still making mistakes, and that's because they haven't got the solidity they need in the centre of midfield.
I just want to pick up on the long ball point. I think it's not so much long balls in the way that you think kick and rush is. There's a lot of balls going across the park and going back into, is United like to play the ball backwards as well. So I wouldn't view the long ball stat as a sign that United are just hoofing it forward. I mean, Daley Blind, he pretty much gets the ball from the back, tries to send it forward, and then the team will often send the ball right back to him through three or four or five passes. So it's more of a weird kind of recycling of possession all across the pitch rather than, you know, trying to play like Norway did in the 90s or something like that.
Really, really obscure reference.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm good for. That's what I'm good for.
Actually, there's a story I want to tell you guys, which is actually a quote from because now we're talking about the classic Man United sort of midfield problem that they've got at the moment. I mean, a long ball down the pitch, even from Rio Ferdinand, not something that would happen very often. I want to tell you a story from Darren Fletcher, something that Darren Fletcher said when he was at his peak, which you know wasn't too long ago, and he was actually instrumental in bringing down Man United the other days. He once said, "I love challenging myself against all the best players, and a lot of them play in the Premiership. I watch how good they are, but when we play them, I think to myself, right, I'm going to see how good you really are. Fabregas, Lampard and Gerrard, I'm going to get against you and see how you like it. And when you've not got the ball, I'm still going to get about you and see how you like it. I'm going to ask you, do you fancy it? Do you like getting kicked? Do you like the fact that I'm going to be at you for the whole 90 minutes? As soon as you get the ball, I'm going to be in your face. You're not going to like it one bit." Dave, do Man United have a player that can do that as well as someone like Jordan Henderson or James Milner could for Liverpool on Thursday?
I don't think so at all. I think going back to Darren Fletcher, you know, he's a wonderful player. He's one of the reasons why Cristiano Ronaldo had such ability on the counter-attack. Darren Fletcher would go over, shuttle over and cover his wing, but his aggression is absolutely missed in this United team. The thing with United is that in these big games, it seems like the Schneiderlin and Herrera, it seems like they get angry. It seems like they get mad in these big games and they put the tackles in, they put the challenges in. And it'll be interesting to see whether it's how the Liverpool midfield will set up. I think United will go with one holding and two in front. Hopefully Liverpool will play with an attacking midfielder because Schneiderlin was absolutely brilliant against Mesut Ozil in the recent game in the Premier League against Arsenal. Really sat on him or intercepted the ball before it got to him. It was a perfect performance in defensive midfield. So I hope that there is the aggression there. I hope that Ander Herrera and Schneiderlin look at each other before the game and go, right, let's smash this. Let's go out there. Let's make some big tackles. Let's put some tackles in and early doors and get the momentum in our way, get the tempo going, get the fans behind us and sort of, you know, push Liverpool. I think Liverpool struggle sometimes when they get pushed, you know, when the other team is aggressive as well. So I hope that's the way United go. Sit back and hit them on the break.
Interesting. I'll get quick fire predictions from all of you. I'll start with Pete's prediction for Liverpool United.
Going to go for a 1-1 draw, I think. It's going to be a very tight game.
Okay. Greg, come to you next.
A surprise 2-1 win for United just because Louis van Gaal's record against Liverpool is he's got a hex on them. I don't know what it is.
He's got a hex. Dave, do you believe in the hex?
I'm going to go 1-0 United. Rashford on the 89th minute. The game's going to be atrocious, but it's going to be a dubious decision in the build-up and we'll score on the counter-attack. It's going to be brilliant.
It is going to be atrocious. It's a Louis van Gaal-managed United team. Next, let's go for Chelsea versus Paris Saint-Germain. Let's talk a little bit about this quite intriguingly poised tie. Chelsea are now able to defend again. PSG have barely been tested of late thanks to their absurd 23-point lead in Ligue 1. But Chelsea have the most Premier League points since the turn of the year, joint most with Spurs. And Chelsea are up to 10th in the league now. Pete, what has Hiddink changed since taking over at Chelsea? They've got less possession on average, a higher pass accuracy and a higher shot accuracy. What's he done with the personnel and the tactics? How's he sort of reinvigorated this team?
I hate to use the word transition, but I think for Chelsea that really is the case. Under Jose Mourinho, we were very slow in getting the ball from back to front. That's always been a sign of Mourinho's Chelsea teams. Since he came in, Hiddink has made sure that players going forward as quickly as possible, getting the ball up to either Costa or Willian, who's been our player of the year, and then hitting teams on the counter very quickly. When he first came in, many thought that he would play either a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1 with Fabregas in the number 10 role and Nemanja Matic and John Obi Mikel sitting. However, what we've seen a lot is Mikel sitting, doing all of the defensive work, and Fabregas still sitting alongside him, but playing those glorious crossfield balls that he does across to the front man. In terms of personnel, obviously Mikel's been the main difference. Since he came in, he's sort of shown Matic how to defend. Obviously, last year, Matic was one of Chelsea's best players.
I bet Matic didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I don't think anyone saw it coming. The whole point we brought Matic in when Mourinho was back in charge was because we wanted someone who was more complete than Mikel. And obviously last year it worked fantastically. But this year, I can't put my finger on it, but something has gone horribly wrong with Matic. So kudos to Hiddink for recognising that and bringing in Mikel, someone he can trust and someone who can just control things while Fabregas does all the nice passing.
Fair enough. Let's also talk a little bit about PSG. They've got a 53 goal difference, plus 53 goal difference. But it's also worth noting this second leg's at Stamford Bridge, and PSG actually have a better away record than a home record. They've only conceded 6 goals away from home. How good are this PSG side, Pete, and how far can they go in this competition? Because on paper, it looks like they've got the upper hand.
Yeah, this is the best iteration of PSG since the Qataris took over and started spending a lot of money. I think that Angel Di Maria has been the key player for them. Last year, they really missed a player who could unlock a defence. Obviously, Marco Verratti is a brilliant, brilliant player, but there were times when teams would sit back and defend and PSG wouldn't really know what to do. But Di Maria, with his pace and his dribbling and his like really clever passing, as we saw for Cavani's goal in the first leg, he's made them a different prospect. And I think with him in the team, combined with the rest of the 11, they could go to the semis or the final. Whether they could win against someone like Barcelona or Bayern Munich, I don't know. But they're now very much in the top echelons of Europe.
Serious contender. Pete, I want to ask you something quickly. I mean, during Serge Aurier's bizarre outburst on Periscope, he wasn't particularly complimentary of anyone, but we're not allowed to quote because, you know, that's somewhat libel. But he did call Thiago Silva the best central defender in the world. That was the one thing that he really made clear. Is he right? I mean, he's got the best pass accuracy in the league with 94%, but that's not the only indicator. Is Thiago Silva the best centre-back in the world?
I came in for a little criticism a couple of years ago for criticising Thiago Silva. I made the point that given the reputation he came with when he joined PSG and the fee he was arriving, he wasn't doing enough to really justify that. I have to say in the last 12-18 months he has stepped up massively, and I think now he's up there with the very best in the world. I think the problem at centre-back right now is that there aren't that many players who you could consider like genuinely world-class. If you look back over the years, sort of early 2000s, centre-back was a position where we were fantastically stocked. Now there are very few players who will go down as one of the game's greats. I mean, maybe someone like Bonucci at Juventus or Ramos or Piqué. There aren't that many about, but I think Thiago Silva probably right now is the best in the world.
Okay. I'm going to come to all of you for a prediction again. Dave, prediction on Chelsea-PSG, what do you reckon?
I'm going to go 2-1 Chelsea, extra time, penalties, and then Chelsea will win it on penalties.
Good Lord, who scores the winning pen?
Has to be that man, Ivanovic.
I cannot
imagine a scenario where Ivanovic is taking a penalty.
It would be disastrous for the entire world. Greg, prediction for Chelsea PSG?
I'll say either the same or 3-2 in PSG to go through on away goals.
Oh, fair enough. And Pete, finally, the man with the knowledge.
I've got to go with my heart here. 3-1 Chelsea, a magical night at Stamford Bridge.
A magical night. There are so many. There are so many.
Is that a Mikel hat-trick or...?
That's not magical. That's just my dreams.
He's due a testimonial soon, isn't he, John Obi Mikel?
Yeah, he should be. He's been here since 2006.
Fantastic. Can't wait for that. The turnout will be glorious. Let's move on to the last of the three games that we want to preview today. Borussia Dortmund versus Tottenham Hotspur. Arguably what's going to be the most interesting spectacle from a tactical point of view. Tottenham managed to out-bottle Arsenal at the weekend, while Dortmund were a man-of-match performance away from Joshua Kimmich from upsetting the champions of Germany. Dave, I've got to come to you here as a massive fan of the Bundesliga. There's a real tactical battle here. Tuchel and Pochettino, two of the best young managers in Europe. How much do they have in common in terms of their tactical approach, and who do you think is going to have the edge going into this one?
I think they're very common in how they set up, how they press, how they like to dominate the ball, how they like to play out the back and then, you know, look for forwards in attacking positions. But really interestingly, Thomas Tuchel went away from his traditional 4-3-3 that he was playing with Dortmund this season to a 5-4-1 to sort of combat Bayern Munich in two areas. Firstly, they had a pentagon in midfield, an attack where they had two sort of central midfielders and then three attackers, two wide players and a striker. What they were doing was pressing Bayern out really, really high up the pitch, which completely killed up their build-up play out of the back. Really, that's one of Bayern's strengths is you know, building up slowly, then hitting a forward pass and then getting the momentum going, playing in between the lines. But also, conversely, on the other side, he had a back five, which completely dealt with the Bayern Munich runners. Thomas Müller's one of the best players in world football to, you know, run off the ball. His movement is fantastic. Matt Hummels completely had him in his pocket for the whole game. He man-marked him. Whenever Thomas Müller sort of ventured to Hummels' zone, Hummels was playing the left centre-back. So whenever Thomas Müller was coming into the inside right channel, Hummels would either gobble him up, either smash him with a tackle, or will intercept the ball before. He made 11 interceptions in the game, which is pretty incredible for a player. That's what you usually get for a team. So Hummels was pretty much a team interceptor in a way, where he just completely dominated Müller. And then sort of that's killed one of Bayern's biggest weapons in a way, with Müller drifting in to that sort of dangerous space and creating, maybe playing a 1-2 of Lahm or getting the ball into Lewandowski. So it was really interesting to see Tuchel kill it. Potentially, you could see Tuchel going the same way against Tottenham. Tottenham you know, they do press, they do like to play out the back. So if he did want to continue with this 5-4-1, you could, you know, could comfortably play that system. But I reckon he'll probably go back to the 4-3-3, just because Tottenham don't have as many runners from midfield, you'd say, as Bayern Munich. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Tottenham will deal with Aubameyang as well. You know, Europe's second top scorer this season. He's just been on fire. He's so, so quick. So if Tottenham do press Dortmund deep in their own half, it's going to be dangerous for them. If they play a high line, you've got to watch Mkhitaryan playing those balls in behind for Aubameyang. So it's going to be a brilliant, brilliant encounter between the two of the best young managers in world football.
Oh, fantastic. And I think you just invented something there, the Pentagon Press. I've never heard of that before. I don't think that's actually a thing. I'm sorry to call you up on it. Also, from a personnel point of view, this is quite interesting. You've got two of the most informed central midfielders in Europe right now, in Julian Weigl and Moussa Dembele. Weigl's completed more passes than any other player in the Europa League this season. Meanwhile, Dembele is undoubtedly Spurs' standout performer, no matter what anyone says about Harry Kane, Toby Alderweireld, and Dele Alli. He's got the best performance score. He's won the most tackles. He's completed the most take-ons. Without Dembele, Spurs don't tick. When he's at his best, they're at their best. How are Pochettino and Tuchel going to play those two against each other? How is that battle going to pan out?
I think it'll be quite interesting. Again, it'll be if Weigl does play in a 4-3-3, he'll play defensive midfield. So it wouldn't be Dembele's direct opponent, because it'd probably be, you know, Gundogan or Shinji Kagawa, dependent on whether, you know, Dembele plays on the left or the right of the double pivot for Spurs. But if they do play this, you know, this 5-4-1, they go back to that system, they will be direct opponents of each other. It'll be really interesting to see Weigl get out of the Dembele press. Dembele's really, really good at pressing the ball. We saw against Arsenal at the weekend. I think he won 7 out of 7 tackles against Arsenal. Really, really good pressing. And he's got the ability on the ball as well. So it'll be interesting to see him press and then Weigl to roll him. Weigl's one of those players that's so good at getting out of a tight situation. You know, either spin one way, spin the other, or play a simple pass out of the press. Very similar to Sergio Busquets. If there's any player in world football that you say is the next Sergio Busquets, it's definitely Julian Weigl. But it's going to be such a battle in midfield and really, really interesting. For example, how are Tottenham going to deal with Shinji Kagawa, a player that's really hit form again after leaving Manchester United?
Interesting, interesting. Greg, how badly are Spurs going to want to win the Europa League and progress in this competition? Obviously, it's a great statement if you can go to the Signal Iduna Park and, you know, put on a performance which really blows the socks off the second best team in Germany. But how much are they focusing on the league, and how much are they focusing on the Europa League, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, they've got to somehow hold back the title-chasing heavyweights at Leicester City. I'm not entirely sure how much they're going to split their focus between the two, but I'd like to think that Pochettino's going to go for it. I mean, as Dave said, he's him and Tuchel are two of the best young managers in Europe, and it would be a bit of a knock, I guess, to kind of not go for against Dortmund. The whole idea, I mean, I understand the argument that fighting on two fronts, especially given how Europa League games are played on a Thursday night, which is close to the weekend games, can hamper a team. But at the same time, the momentum you can get from really going for it in these ties can actually help your league form sometimes. I mean, the classic example is Man United in 1999. Now, I'm not saying Spurs are anywhere close to the quality of that team. But, I mean, if you look at the fixtures they played through, I mean, you know, they probably shouldn't have made it as far as they did, because they should have been absolutely shattered and not had it in them. But it actually, bouncing through all these big games, it actually helped them get a head of steam up. And I don't know, I think Spurs will try and go for it and try and get as far as they can in Europa League, if only just to keep this positivity going around their team, which is a big part of what's kind of got this really young side as far as they have.
Mm. Pete, we spoke briefly about Dave spoke briefly about Aubameyang earlier. I mean, he's got 22 goals in the Bundesliga this season. He's only behind Lewandowski's 23, but he's scored 22 goals from 39 fewer attempts than Lewandowski's 23. I mean, you're a passionate follower of Ligue 1. Was there any sign he was going to be this good when he was at Saint-Etienne, or did you kind of see it coming?
Oh no, I wouldn't say I saw it coming at all. When he was at Saint-Etienne, he very much relied on his pace to get through defences. When teams pressed high up, he would just break in behind. And more often than not, he would actually miss the target. He was very inefficient with his chances. Since he's gone to Dortmund, I think he's become way more clinical in front of goal. I think he's added a lot more to his play in terms of hold-up play, bringing his teammates in. And I think he's become a very complete player now, which is to his credit, because when he was at Saint-Etienne, I never thought he'd become more than like a decent level Europa League striker, not someone who could be one of the best strikers in the world. What's interesting looking at him compared with obviously Spurs' main man, Harry Kane, I feel like they're both quite confidence players. You saw after Kane's goal on Saturday in the North London Derby, he thought he could score from anywhere. He picked up the ball and just started shooting from everywhere. He thought he was God. I feel like whoever gets the first goal in this tie between Kane and Aubameyang could have a big say on the way it goes.
Harry Kane thinks he's God. Thanks for the outstanding insight, Pete. I never expected to hear that sentence. Final prediction of the day. I'm going to come to Greg first. Borussia Dortmund versus Tottenham Hotspur on Thursday. Earlier kickoff. What do you think is going to happen?
I think it'll be a draw, either 1-1 or 2-2.
Okay, fair enough. Dave, prediction for Dortmund Hotspur?
I'm going to go with 2-0 Dortmund. I think potentially Spurs have been stretched a little bit too far. You know, massive game at the weekend against Arsenal, probably taken a lot out of them. So I think Dortmund are going to comfortably win this one.
All right, okay. And Pete, what do you reckon?
2-1 Dortmund. I can't see either side keeping a clean sheet, to be honest.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting. After both have had exceptional defences this season, you're all predicting clean sheet disasters. Okay, fantastic. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. We're going to see how all of those results pan out. I think we're all very excited about the Liverpool United game and what Kolo Touré could potentially do. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This has been the Squawker Talker. I've been Nick English, and we'll see you next week. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Terms and conditions apply.